Dina, can you hear me?
Hi, I'm here. Yep.
Okay, fine. Sorry, I was finishing something with the source
Oh,
sheet.
take your time.
I'm just going to close everything else on my computer right now so that we'll streamline because there's always so much stuff here.
I'm sure.
Even here, one, two, three. I think we're good.
And with your permission, while you're doing this, I'm going to stream this live on Facebook as well, because we've been getting a lot of hits on Facebook.
Okay, sure.
Great.
Why am I not? Okay, here I am. Okay, we're good.
Great. I'm just setting this up here. So basically, we've been going for 35 minutes, taking Q&A at the end, unless you would prefer to take Q&A during, in which case we can definitely do that as well. And are you planning, I saw the what you just sent to me. Are you planning to share your screen to show that?
I have my screen shared for my PowerPoint.
Oh, I see now. Sorry, I was in the Facebook portion of this, so I didn't have it open.
Nope, that's totally fine. And it's there and it's ready. This is very weird. Like, I feel like I have no cues, no visual cues.
From what?
You'll tell me when to begin, when to end.
Oh, yes, 100% I will. I will, I don't have my camera on just because they don't need to see me. There's nothing to see. But I will give you a cue when we're ready to start. This is recording, but I will trim this all out so that any chatter that we have before we get started won't be in the final recording. And yeah, I'll just give you a cue around 4:30 or a couple minutes after. And it's all yours. I want you, like, don't feel the need to do any kind of intense intros or anything. Just get started however you're comfortable getting started.
Okay. I'm trying to adjust the lamp. I'm going to, no, that's, is that better, the light? Or should I leave the lamp on?
Let me see the other way. That's actually good right there.
Okay, so let me get
it. I don't want too much glare in your face.
Good?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
And then, yeah, we'll just wait and get started. Like I said, we have people that are that have been viewing this on Facebook as well, so I'm just getting that going. And I'll let you know at like 4:30. I'm just going to mute myself just in case I make any noise doing this Facebook setup, but I'm here if you need anything, so take the next couple of minutes to do whatever you need to do.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Good afternoon, everyone. Glad that you can join me on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Today's talk will be on Beyond Cowicide, a new look at Korbanot. And I want to confess, I wanted to have you join with me on a mission. The mission is a la Nick Allen, the main character, the 10-year-old character in Andrew Clement's book, Frindle, to coin a new word and to have it enter the lexicon. The new word is that of cowicide, which I'm going to define as the act of killing a cow, thinking you're bringing a korban, but really all that you're doing is killing a cow. In order to better understand this word, I invite you to come explore with me what are korbanot and how do they fit into our life today. It is quite appropriate that today is the day that we're going to take this exploration, because today is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the day on which the Mishkan was dedicated, the first day that Bnei Israel had the possibility, the opportunity to bring korbanot. Sefer Vayikra begins as follows. Vayikra el Moshe, Vayedaber Hashem elav me'ohel moed lemor. And Hashem called to Moshe, and Hashem spoke to him from the ohel moed, saying. It's a slightly unusual expression. We're used to the following paradigm when Hashem speaks to Moshe, namely, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. And Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying. What is this with the Vayikra el Moshe, the introduction of first calling to Moshe? Was this normal? Did it happen all the time? According to Rashi, in the first pasuk of Sefer Vayikra, L'chol dibrot u'l'chol amirot u'l'chol tzivuyim kadma kriya l'shon chiba l'shon shemalachei hasharet mishtamshim bo. Before any time that Hashem spoke to Moshe, whether it was a dibra or an amira or tzivoy, a command, he always would call him first, vayikra, as a showing of affection. Lashon shemalachei hasharet mishtamshim bo, the same type of terminology used by angels. Aval leneviyei haumot akum nigla lehen b'lashon arai v'tum'ah shenemar vayikar Elokim el Bilam. This was not how Hashem spoke to members of the other nation. So for example, when he speaks to Bilam, it's with the use vayikar. Rashi, nonetheless, we only see this expression in three different times in Tanakh. It could be they always were there, as Rashi is suggesting, but they're only listed in three other times. In Shmot Perek Gimel, in Shmot Perek Yotet, in here in Vayikra Pasuk Aleph. The first one, in Shmot Perek Gimel, is the first time Hashem speaks to Moshe. Vayar Hashem kisar lirot, vayikra elav Elokim mitoch hasne, vayomer Moshe, Moshe, vayomer hineni. And Hashem saw that Moshe turned aside, and he called to him from the burning bush, saying, Moshe, Moshe, to which Moshe responded, here am I. The second time we see this is an equally momentous occasion in Perek Yotet. Moshe Allah el ha'elokim, vayikra ilav Hashem min ha'har lemor, kol tomar levet Yaakov v'taged livnei Yisrael. And Moshe went up to Hashem, and Hashem called him out of the mountain, saying, this is what you should tell the house of Yaakov, this is what you should tell the children of Israel. So we have Hashem using the term vayikra when he first spoke to Moshe at the burning bush, at the sneh. We have the term vayikra when Hashem is calling Moshe to give him the luchot, to begin to give him the dibrot, the commandments, the first commandments to Bnei Israel. We have the same term here in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. What is so special about this day? To understand, we need to put things in context. We need to look backwards in Sefer Shmot, and we're going to look in the aftermath of Chet HaEgel. What has happened so far in Perek Lamed Bet is the following. Moshe has come down from the mountain carrying the luchot, carrying the two stones that he has, that Hashem has given him, carved with the Aseret HaDvarim, with the 10 sayings. He has seen the wild party the Bnei Israel are involved in. He has seen the golden calf, the Egel HaZahav. He has thrown down the luchot, destroying them. He has taken the golden calf. He has burned it. He has ground up the ashes and given it mixed with water to Bnei Israel to drink. He has organized the Levim, called them to action, and they have killed 3,000 people. And then a magifah, a plague, has come and struck others. At this point, the question is, what is going to happen to Bnei Israel? Are they going to continue on to Eretz Israel? Will Hashem go with them? In the following interchange, we see that things are still not done. There is still a lot to be resolved. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe, lech ale mizeh ata v'ha'am. Hashem is commanding Moshe, okay, you've got to leave the desert now. You can't stay on indefinitely. Where should you go? El ha'aretz asher nishbati l'Avraham l'Yitzchak l'Yaakov. Continue on the journey. I made this promise to the Avot. Take Bnei Israel, go, and you'll help fulfill that promise. V'shalachti l'fanecha malach v'gerashti et haknani ha'emori ha'chiti v'ha'prizi ha'chivi v'ha'yivusi. And you will take this angel to lead in front of you, and that will help you drive away the different nations that are living in the nation already in the land of Canaan. But there's one caveat. Ki lo e'ele b'kirbecha. You're going to go. I'll send a messenger to help you with the path, but I am no longer going to accompany you. Ki am kshe oref ata pen achalcha vaderach. Bnei Israel are a stubborn nation. I'm scared that if I accompany you, I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will get so upset at the future actions of Bnei Israel, and I will destroy you. In the words of Rabbi Menachem Liptak, what Hashem is agreeing to at this point, he will continue the Brit Avot. He will continue the covenant he made with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. He will give them the land of Israel. What won't continue is the Brit Sinai. Bnei Israel will no longer be that special nation, the Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, the holy people, with a mission to help spread the concept of holiness to the world. Bnei Israel hear about it and they are very upset. Moshe hears about it and he is equally upset. So Hashem is going to come up with another possibility. The first step of this is for Moshe to take the Ohel Moed, where he would communicate with Hashem, and place it outside the tent that we see in Pasuk Zion. And whenever Hashem would speak to Moshe, when Moshe would go to speak to Hashem, he would have to leave the mountain. At this point, Moshe will go up for a third set of 40 days from Rosh Chodesh Elul till Yom Kippur to pray on behalf of Bnei Israel that Hashem should, quote unquote, reconsider, that Hashem will agree to accompany Bnei Israel on their journey to Eretz Israel, that Hashem will agree to reestablish the covenant of Har Sinai, to once again have Bnei Israel be their Am Kadosh. And finally, on Yud Tishrei, on Yom Kippur, Hashem says, Salachti kidvarecha. He agrees to the terms. He will reestablish this Brit Sinai. Bnei Israel will be the Am Kadosh. In order to make this happen, there's going to be a new paradigm, however. There's going to be the Mishkan with all that it entails to help mediate, to help buffer, that when Bnei Israel do something so egregiously wrong, there'll be something about the Mishkan that will help them get kapara, that will help them get forgiveness, so that Hashem will no longer want to destroy them. And so Bnei Israel, on the day following Yom Kippur, get the commandment of building the Mishkan and other parshiyot with it to help them figure out what to do. Fast forward some 6 months, it is now Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The Mishkan has been built and it is now open for business. On this day, and that is today actually, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so many years ago, Moshe teaches Bnei Israel Shmona Parshiot, and you can see the source in the Talmud Bavli, Masechet Gittin, De Amar Rabbi Levi, Shmona Parshiot Ne'emru B'yom Shehukam Bo HaMishkan. There are 8 different topics that Hashem is telling Moshe from the Ohel Moed to go and tell Bnei Israel about the Kohanim, about the Levi'im, about what happens when you're tamei, when you're impure. about when people are impure, where they have to distance themselves from. It will be what will happen if people come to the Beit HaMikdash under the influence of wine, about lighting the menorah daily, and how do we become pure again, especially from Tumat Met, from the impurity of a dead body, the Parsha of Para Aduma. If we look again at the next, or if we look at the next psukim in Sefer Vayikra, we see what Hashem called out to Moshe and how he began to instruct him. We see how to begin to use the Mishkan, with the first lesson being, what do we bring? If we're being invited into the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we're being invited into his tabernacle, what sort of hostess gift do we bring? Says Hashem the following, Daber el b'nei Yisrael va'amarta alehem, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban la'Hashem, min ha'beima, min ha'bakar, u'min ha'tzon, takrivu et korbanchem. Tell B'nai Israel, speak to B'nai Israel and tell them, Adam, a person who wishes from you to bring a korban, should bring one from the behema, from a domestic animal, min ha'bakar, from the cattle cow family, umin hatzon, from either sheep or goats, takrivu, you should bring et korbanchem, your korban. The word korban, again, is not what we commonly translate as a sacrifice, but rather a means of bringing ourselves close, from the shorish, from the root word, karev, kush, kuf, resh, vav, to come close, and the idea is that a person should come close. Why these terms? Why Adam and not Ish? Why Yakriv Mikhem? Says many of the Mefarshim, Adam connotes anybody. Any person has the privilege to bring a korban. It can be a man, it can be a woman, it can be a Jew, it can be a non-Jew. The only person who is excluded from bringing a korban is one who's not mikem of you, a member of B'nai Israel who doesn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which actually makes sense. How on earth can you bring a korban to God if you're denying the existence of God? That would be an example of kawicide. But everyone else has an opportunity to bring a korban. You're bringing it from a behema. You're bringing it from an animal. And we'll look a little bit more into why an animal and what these different types of animals represent. But ultimately, by bringing the animals, what you're doing is you're bringing yourself. The Sforno highlights this in a parish on the second pasuk, Adam ki yakriv mikem, ki yakriv me'atzmechem. When you bring yourself, when he brings of himself, bevidui dvarim v'hachna'a, as a means of confessing a sin, a means of humbling himself. Al derech uneshalma farim sfatenu, as the Navi Hosea says, and we will bring, instead of bringing cows or bulls, we're going to bring our lips, our voices, our words. Ocha amru zivchei elokim ruach nishbara, ki en chavetz b'ksilim hamakrivim, bilti hachna'a kodemet. That the korban, the meat that we're bringing, has to be accompanied by a crushed spirit. Because Hashem doesn't want fools who are only committing kawicide, who don't have any thought about why they're bringing the animal. Mikem continues fornu, v'lo mikulchem, not from all of you, lehotzi et hamishumad. One who doesn't believe in Hashem is not allowed to bring a korban. Is this really what Hashem wants from us? To bring a korban, to slaughter an animal, to take of the blood, to pour it on the altar, to cut up the parts and to burn them? It seems very foreign to us, very gory, very far from what we would imagine an ideal to be. The Rambam, Maimonides, agrees with that aspect and notes that this was really seen as a mean to an end. In his Moreh Nevuchim, his Guide to the Perplexed, he says as follows, It is impossible to go suddenly from one extreme to the other. The nature of man will not allow him suddenly to discontinue everything to which he has been accustomed. Now God sent Moshe to make Bnei Israel a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, Mamlechet Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh, by means of the knowledge of God. Bnei Israel were commanded to devote themselves to his service. But the general mode of worship in which Bnei Israel were brought up consisted in sacrificing animals to temples containing images, to bow down to these images, to burn incense before them. It was in accordance with the wisdom and plan of Hashem, as displayed in the whole creation, that he did not command us to give up and to discontinue all these modes of worship. For to obey such a commandment would have been contrary to the nature of man, who generally clings to that which he is used. So in other words, Hashem is giving us some sort of security blanket. We were raised in Egypt. Everywhere we saw around us, people were using sacrifices, korbanot, offerings, as a means of connecting to their God. It was going to be hard enough to establish a relationship to a God that we hadn't known very well or for so long. It was going to be hard enough to establish a relationship to a God that we could not see, that we could not hear, that we could not sense in any of our five senses. So Hashem is giving us this security, this, if you would, a training wheel sort to accomplish our first bicycle riding until we get more proficient. We're going to be allowed to offer up a korban, but the korban is only going to be Hashem. And in addition, there are going to be some bells and whistles, some rules and regulations. We can't offer up a korban wherever we want. We have to go l'makom asher yivchar, to the place that he will designate, ultimately to the Beit HaMikdash. We can't offer up whatever we want. It has to be from a pre-prescribed list of behema, of cows, of sheep, of goats, of some birds, sometimes bread offerings, grain offerings. We're not going to be able to do the entire things by ourselves. There are going to be people designated to help us out, to actually take our offering and do the avodah, do the actual work in order to bring it to Hashem. So we can do these things, but it's almost as if we were given a pacifier, but told only in the crib, only for while you're taking a nap. With the idea that after a certain amount of time, we will no longer need the pacifier, we will no longer need the security blanket, we will no longer need the training wheels, we will understand the essence of communicating with God, the essence of getting close to God, and we won't need the intermediary. In another location in Mora Nevuchim, the Rambam continues that by using the animals which the other nations used as their God, by taking a cow, by taking a sheep, by offering it for our God, it will help to eradicate the idea of idolatry from within us. We are demonstrating to one and all, but most importantly to ourselves, that the gods of the other nations have no power. It is only our God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who truly is powerful. But not all agree with this perspective of korbanot. Not all feel that it's the ideal. Notable among them is the Ramban, Nachmanides, who in a very long commentary to the ninth pasuk, to pasuk tet in Parak Aleph, lambasts against the Rambam for many different reasons. First of all, he says, how can we be upset with the idea of korbanot, looking at it as a response to avodah zarah? The idea of korbanot preceded that of idolatry. We see Cain and Hevel bringing a korban early on in Sefer Bereishit. We see Noach bringing a korban. They're not responding to the influences around them. They're not responding to the society. Second of all, he maintains, if anything, using animals, which the others perceive as gods, elevates them. The other nations are not necessarily going to be upset if we're sacrificing a cow for our God. They will say, look, you too feel that a cow is elevated and somewhat special. As a third argument, the Ramban contends, how can we look at something as not ideal when the words associated with it are reach nichoach la Hashem? How can we call a korban something disgusting if Hashem himself will declare it's a pleasant smell? The Ramban feels that bringing a korban is the ideal, and this is why, and this is the part I've cut and pasted and put in front of you. V'yoter ra'oi lishmoa hata'am shomrim bahem, ki ba'avor shem'ase b'nei adam nigmarim b'machshava uvedibur uvume'ase. That actions of man have three components to them. There is the thought, there is the speech, and then there is an action. And because of that, tziva Hashem ki ka'asher yechata yavi korban. So therefore, Hashem is commanded that when a person sins, he should bring a korban. Yismoch yadav alav keneged hamaseh. He must put his hands over the korban, corresponding to the action that the person did in sinning. V'idvadeh v'fiv keneged hadibor, and confess orally using words corresponding to whatever sin he has done through speech. V'isrof v'esh hakara v'hachlayot shem klei hamachshava v'ta'ava, and burn the innards of the animal, which in the time of the Ramban were said to be the seat of thought and lust and desire. V'achraim keneged yadav v'raglav shel adam ha'osim kol melachto, and to burn also the legs, representing the hands and the feet of the person who did the action, the person who is now asking for forgiveness. V'izrok adam al hamizbeach keneged damo benafsho, and he will gather the blood and pour it over the altar, corresponding to his own life force, to his own blood. Kidei sheyachshov adam ba'asoto kol ele, ki chatal elokav begufo uvenafsho. And a person should think, by doing all of the above, that he has sinned to his God with his body and with his soul. V'ra'oi lo sheyishtapech damo, and really, it would be fitting for his blood to be the one that was spilled. V'isaref gufo lulei chesed habore shelakach mimenu tmura v'chiper hakorban hazeh sheyeh damo tachat damo nefesh tachat nefesh. And if not for the grace of God, it should be his body that is being burned now on the altar. And instead, Hashem is accepting a replacement for the blood, a replacement for the soul, for the life force. V'rashay evrei hakorban keneged rashay evarav v'hamanot l'achayot bahem morei hatara shitpalalu alav v'korban hatamid bavor shelo yinatzlu harabim mechato tamid. And the head of the animal corresponds to his head and to his limbs. And the gifts that he is giving now to the Kohanim, to the ones who teach Torah, that they should pray on his behalf. So we have two different positions on what a korban is all about. Is it a concession, in the words of the Rambam, in the words of Maimonides, a means to an end, a way to get us to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to connect to him? Or is it actually an ideal? Because as we bring the Korban, we have to have these thoughts in our minds of how we're connecting and what really should be happening. When we look at the Psukim again, we can see that there are different types of animals that we're allowed to bring. And each one of these animals is going to shed a different symbolism onto what we're bringing to further help us understand what it is about the korbanot and how we're trying to connect to Hashem, whether it's the ideal, as the Ramban Nachmanides says, or perhaps a concession, as the Rambam Maimonides says. We're offered min habeima, from a domestic animal, min habakar, from the cattle, or min hatson, from the sheep and from the goats. We're going to look at two different ways of understanding these animals. There are many more out there, but I selected two to share with you today. The first from Rav Hirsch. Bakar, according to Rav Hirsch, will represent a man who is dynamic, who works in the service of his master. Tson, either a keves, a sheep, an ayal, a ram, a seir, a goat, or a smaller goat, or an ez, a little goat, a man whose vital needs are provided for by his shepherd. There are times, says Rav Hirsch, when we admit we have not fulfilled our duty in the past, and we commit ourselves to discharging it from now onward. We recognize that God has given us a task to which we must devote all of our energies. If this recognition is what underlies our admission and our new commitment, then we bring an olah from Bakar. We approach God as a par, as an egel which will become a par in order to do the work that has been entrusted to us. Yet, he continues, there are times when our admission about the past and our commitment for the future stem from the recognition of our indebtedness to God, our shepherd. We sense that all that we have comes from his hand and is sustained by his providence. We ardently desire to devote to his service our lives, which are in his hands, and resolve to live according to his will with all the strength that he has given us. We approach the shepherd of Israel as a keves, or at the height of feeling our debt of gratitude. We approach him as an ayel, as one of the flock who has been graced with special blessing. Or we approach him as an ez, or seer, firm in our resolve to resist any temptation that would remove us from divine God guidance. Rav Hirsch at this point is talking specifically about an olah, a type of korban that is voluntary. We're not obligated to bring it. It is a korban where everything is burned on the altar. There's nothing that's going to be left for the kohanim, certainly nothing for the person who's bringing it. We're going to use that to sort of thrust ourselves onward, somewhat like cables that are going to jump a car. Our battery needs a little bit of reinvigorating. We bring a korban. And depending on what element we want to revitalize within ourselves, whether it's the dynamic work aspect of our personality, or whether it's more the idea of we have a shepherd, we have someone leading us, we will then choose whether to bring a par or a keves. That is Rav Hirsch on the animals. Rabbi Sacks, in one of his addresses on Parshat Vayikra, has a slightly different way of looking at the symbolism of the animals. The word bakar, cattle, in Hebrew, reminds us of the word boker, dawn, literally to break through, as the first rays of sunlight break through the darkness of night. Cattle stampeding break through barriers, unless constrained by fences. Cattle are no respecters of boundaries. To sacrifice the bakar is to learn to recognize and respect boundaries between holy and profane, pure and impure, permitted and forbidden. Barriers of the mind can sometimes be stronger than wills. Finally, tzon, flocks, represent the herd instinct, the powerful drive to move in a given direction because others are doing likewise. The great figures of Judaism, Abraham, Moshe, the prophets, were distinguished precisely by their ability to stand apart from the herd, to be different, to challenge the idols of the age, to refuse to capitulate to the intellectual fashions of the moment. That ultimately is the meaning of holiness in Judaism. Kadosh, the holy, is something set apart, different, separate, distinctive. Jews were the only people in history consistently to refuse to assimilate to the dominant culture or convert to the dominant faith. By bringing that which is animal within us close to God, we allow the material to be suffused with the spiritual, and we become something else, no longer slaves of nature, but servants of the living God. So we take the element to break through and we learn to respect the boundaries, or we take an animal which represents the masses and we learn that sometimes we need to stand on our own and not do that which everyone else is doing. Fine, you might say, that's what korbanot was. That's what we were able to bring when we had the Mishkan. But what about now? We don't have a Mishkan. We don't have a Beit Mikdash. I'm sitting here in my house giving a shiur remotely. We're not allowed to easily go out of our house. We no longer even have our shuls to meet, to congregate, to pray together. What do we have? In a dialogue that the Gemara recreates between Hashem and Avraham, as part of the Brit Ben Aptarim, the first covenant that he undertakes with Abraham, the covenant that promises that Bnei Israel will get the land of Israel, the Brit Avot that Rabbi Liebtag talks about. Abraham is concerned. You're making this promise to my children. First of all, I don't have a child yet, but that will be another story. But what's going to happen if they sin, if they do something so wrong and you get mad at them? How do I know that this promise will always exist? And the Gemara records the following midrash. Vayomer Hashem Elokim, Vayomer, and Avram is saying, Hashem Elokim, Bame'eda ki Ereshena. How will I know that I'll be able to inherit? Amar Avraham lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Shema Chas V'Shalom, Yisrael Choti'im Lefanecha, Va'ata Oseh Lahem, Kedor HaMabul U'Kedor HaFlaga. Hashem, what will happen if, God forbid, Bnei Israel, my children, will sin as did the generation of the flood with Noach, as did the generation of the Tower of Babel, and you destroyed them or separated them? Amar Lo Lav, says Hashem, no. They won't do that. I'm not going to do that again. Amar lefanav, ribono shel olam, b'me eda. Says Abraham, how will I know? What guarantee is there? Amar lo, and Hashem says the following, k'chali egla mishuleshet, and tells Abraham to prepare the following. As a side note, there's a lot of discussion what the term egla mishuleshet means. It can either be three eglim, and that Abraham had to bring three of three different types of animals. It could be the third that was born from the mother, the third born, or possibly could be an egel of 3 years old. That's not as relevant right now, but he's being told to take these animals. He's going to be told to cut up the animals. This is not a korban. There is not an altar. Abraham is not bringing a flame. It is Hashem who is going to pass between the two pieces of these animals. And with his passing through, with the flame, he is the one, Hashem is the one taking upon himself the brit, the obligations of this treaty. But this midrash is suggesting it's serving as a foreshadowing of the concept of a korban. It is not a korban, but hints to one. And I continue to read. Amar lefanav, ribono shel olam, tenach bizman shebeit hamikdash kayam. And with the knowledge that his children will have korbanot to serve as a buffer, to serve as a mediator, to ask for forgiveness when they do wrong, as knowledge that Hashem will never get so mad at them that he will want to destroy them, Abraham is content. But he asks, what will happen when there is no longer a beit hamikdash? Matehe alehem, what will happen then? Amarlo, kfarti kanti lahem seder korbanot. Kolzman shekorim bahem, ma'ale ani alehem ki ilu makrivim lefanai korban, umochel ani al kol avonotehem. Don't worry, says Hashem to Abraham. There might not be a physical place where your children will be able to bring a korban. But they will have the knowledge, they will have the words in Sefer Vayikra, they will have that portion of the tefillah that they can read. As long as they say that as part of their prayers, with the intent as if they're bringing a korban, as long as they learn the psukim with the intent of, can't bring it, but here's what I would be bringing and saying if I could, that is fine. I will consider as if they have brought a korban, as if they have even sacrificed themselves, and forgive them for the sins. We don't have the mikdash. We don't have our shuls. We're praying on our own right now. But by learning Sefer Vayikra, by learning the difference between a korban and kawaside, by taking the words of the Navi Hosea to heart, that by doing tshuva, all we really need is our words, we can ask Hashem for forgiveness. We can remind ourselves that while it might seem very far away and very distant, especially in this time of social distancing, Karov Eleinu Hashem, Hashem is still very close to us. Uneshalma Farim Svatenu. In place of the korbanot, we can no longer bring. In place of the minyan, we can no longer participate. We still have the words that Hashem has given us. We still have that relationship, the path to it were created long ago, and those paths still exist. And all we have to do is find them. The book of Vayikra is not one of Kawasite. It is not one only of Korbanot. It is one of establishing this relationship to Hashem. Hashem has given us permission to establish this relationship. He has taught us to do so. And what better day than on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, on the day that the Mishkan was established so many years ago, to remind ourselves that the pathway still exists. Wishing everybody a Chodesh Tov, a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, a happy and healthy Pesach.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rabinovich. If anybody has any questions, feel free to type them in the chat, or if it's okay and we can share your email address afterward, perhaps people can ask you directly.
Either one is fine.
Fantastic. All right. We'll let people contact you directly if they have any questions. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Chodesh Tov, everyone.
Bye-bye.